Welcome to Ever Beyond, on Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, Tiernasau from Ireland, ScottishSovereignsOnTheLand.Ning.com. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, Greetings, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. You may not even have it, you may be sort of working on a Mars time or something like that. Welcome, anyway, whatever time of day you might be listening to this this show or archive. Tonight, my guest is my dear friend Nancy Collins. Nancy Collins? What? What? Who's Nancy Collins?
Hopkins.
Yeah, no, I know, but I wonder who Nancy Collins is. Anyway, my dear friend Nancy Hopkins.
Nice lady, probably.
Oh, I hope so. So, yeah, I'm on the other side of a week with Pip. And everybody's going, oh, how cute to have a husky there. Well, not if you like silence. Not if you crave silence and it's precious to you. Anyway, so I said goodbye to him this afternoon. I'm a bit frazzled, so treat me nice. Nancy, what's been going on? We've been having such a week on, you know, like the revelations that have come this week have been thick and fast, haven't they?
Yeah. It's like every time I turn around, there's another great subject to talk about, to learn. It's a never-ending process. It's crazy. What did you find? What happened to you this week that you were just like, woo?
Okay, about? Revelations of the week. Well, the first thing, as I tried for about 3 days to watch the Harold Kurtz video, but the barking got to me. So, you know, as I said, my brain hasn't been available much this week because there's barking echoing in it. And now the barking stopped and I can think again and I can smile and do and be pleasant to people. Anyway, so the first thing was Harold Kurtz, the Kautzweller, the black goo, the Schwarze Stein, the... all that stuff, and the very curious comment about Sarah Adams at the beginning of that video. I don't know if you saw that. And then the next one was Simon mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and his name is Chris Thomas. So I finally caught up with him, and what a lovely man he is. He's a nice old Welsh man. And he reads the Akashic records, and he's been talking about the Anunnaki story. You know the Anunnaki story, the whole Sumeria and all that stuff and all that. And he said, "What a, you know, soul slave race thing?" And he said, "Oh, what a load of bollocks that is." I thought, "Oh yeah, good one."
What's he saying is the real truth.
Well. The truth, as far as what he's managed to discern by reading through the records on this sort of stuff, is that there was a race that has come through about 300 years ago that then sent themselves back into time to establish their own credential in Sumeria. And the whole story about Nibiru and the gold and all of that stuff is a fabrication. And that they've been, you know, time traveling to fool us all. And that they're now, what's the nature? It's very much like this Archon thing that he's been that we've been talking about. It's another group. It might even be the Vinkala that Jessica and I have been talking about.
So you're saying that they're going back into history in order to pretend to be somebody, to make up a whole story, and I think I'm confused.
Yeah, well, the idea, and it's part of the whole hijack of the gods. And you're probably aware that, you know, that there is these two kinds of the these titans or gods. They used to be sort of not maleficent, but just kind of, you know, self-absorbed. But these new ones, who seem to have the same names, seem to be like 10 times as mean and cruel, and you know, not the same guys. Do you see what I'm saying?
First off, okay, there was a sound behind you. Do you have your tea?
My kettle is boiling. I have to attend to that.
I got fixated on the kettle.
Should have told me. Kettle's boiling.
I wasn't sure. You know, I think that could be his kettle. So, did you take care of your kettle yet? Do you want to take care of your kettle? Did I just get dropped? Where are we? Can you hear me? Uh-oh.
No, I just went to get the kettle.
Okay, all right.
I thought you were going to continue speaking.
Okay, I asked you, did you need to, and you had already done it. So, okay. Listen, we're getting the show together. Just be patient. We'll get on track.
It'll come on track. I've just, opened the kettle thing, so it's still...
While you were talking, I look over, and the cat had somehow managed to get his butt in his cat food.
Chaos everywhere. What's going on?
I had to go over and clean up his butt because I'd stuck it on the chair next to him because I wanted to make sure he was eating. And I turned around and he was in it. And So anyway, yes. All I know... Okay, so these people decided to go back so that there would be somebody that everybody could be focusing on to keep their attention away from what was really happening. It's the old stage trick.
Yeah.
I wonder how many of these people are out there, because the more we look at it, the more muddled everything gets, especially when you start to accept that there is time travel.
And dimensional travel, or dimensional, whether you call it travel or not, but let's call it travel just for the sake of it. It's because it's still here, but anyway. The idea that... We just really don't know what's been messing around with us. And it's like one level after another after another. Oh, well, first it's the Pope, you know. All right, then it's the Jesuits, then it's the... You know, it goes back and back and back and back. You know, oh, it's the Khazarians, oh, it's the Jews. And then we find that we're up against invisible, other-dimensional creatures that are influencing people on a mental virus level. And then there's the nanobots. it's been a bit of a week, really, to keep your confidence high, isn't it? I mean, I suppose you're always confident, Nancy, aren't you?
I'm always confident.
Seems that way.
Yes, I actually am, because I can only look at these things and judge by the feelings I get. You know, does it vibe with me? Do I resonate with it? And the thing that resonated with me, of course, was Simon talking about black goo. I'm going like, what the heck is a black goo thing? And we talked about that on the Wednesday show when we were talking about Whitley Strieber's last show. And no, yes, that's right. And this other stuff about the Anunnaki, I don't know that we can really trust any of it, because I don't know that it doesn't change every time we change a timeline. In other words, if we make some kind of a leap in enlightenment, it's sort of like a picture. If you think of a picture, okay, and you're looking at the picture and somebody comes along and does something to the foreground, inevitably, it will change your perspective to the background. And I kind of think that this is what happens, is that everything is malleable. You know, what's history? It depends on what day you're talking. You know what I'm saying?
It gets like that sometimes, yeah. And, you know, people are always talking about, you know, the truth and the absolute truth. And as we have found, you know, we can find a truth, and then the next week we find a truth that... he kind of encompasses the first truth, but like is the opposite of it, you know. And then you go to another level, and it's like the same thing happens on the next. You know, it just keeps going. That there's no bedrock of absolute foundational truth, because everything turns out to be vibration.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm only like half an hour into the video, but David Wilcox came up. Well, somebody, and I'm sure they posted it illegally because he probably needed to get money for us to see this, which is a drawback with David, but in support of David. How else does anybody make any way in? I mean, if you've got to work at a job and do the things that David does, how can you do this? We should not feel like he doesn't deserve what he's asking for. He needs to continue. He needs to have some kind of support thing. But I do love it when we get these freebies. And this video was absolutely mind-bending. That's why I spent an hour and a half already, and I'm only a half an hour into it, because I had to keep taking notes and keep trying to think about what he was saying. And I openly admit that I don't have it down yet. But he came out with some stunning scientific information, one that came out in October of last year and one that came out in the spring, that absolutely, positively, without a doubt, confirms what I've been saying, that the universe is an energy universe and energy follows geometry. And this one, let me see if I can try to do this. I'll let you know if I'm not getting it right. But basically, the first one is this concept that these Nobel Prize winning scientists have regarding what the universe really is. And it's their contention that there was no Big Bang, and nothing ever started, boom, you know, and a splash of light and everything happened. What the key to it is that there was a geometric shape formed in what they're calling a fluid universe. The name of the article that I went to after listening to David, that was part of it, as I kept checking his reference. Well, yeah, every time he said a name, I was checking who is this guy? You know, is this real? Where did it come from? And this article was entitled, "Is the Universe? Are we underwater in the universe?" Something to that effect. And this geometric form that they created, that absolutely mathematically answers all the questions that the Big Bang would answer. When David got a hold of it, and he said, "Now look at this, and you know, hopefully on Cosmic Reality on Tuesday night we'll cover this with photographs and other things to be able to get you to see it." Hopefully by then I can, you know, be more succinct in what I'm saying. But this geometric form that they developed mathematically, if extended, in other words, it was almost like they only saw a part of it, is a Merkaba. And for those people who don't know what a Merkaba is, it's two tetrahedrons, three-sided pyramids, that are joined so you have the Star of David look to it in a one-dimension plane. In a three-dimension plane, it is the tetrahedrons together. And that is the basic, and according to, what was he talking about? Was it Tibetan? He was talking about the Tibetans, mandrel that they have in their art and in their writings that is supposed to be the center of the universe, and of course it is the Merkaba, the tetrahedrons together. And so somewhere way back, you know, thousands of years, the Tahitians were told, "Hey, look at this, you know, this is the center of the universe." And now go forward into our time frame, just last October, and you've got these very, very successful scientists who are saying, whoa, the entire universe is started with this Merkaba. And that the Merkaba, when you work it out, all the geometry that's involved in it, what they were specifically stating is that the Merkaba is causing energy to take a certain flow. And once that energy starts flowing and the Merkaba is vibrating, then all other shapes, the platonic shapes, come out of it. And that's how you build the geometry of the universe, which is basically what I was saying right along. That, you know, and I was saying it because that's what I could see, not because I had, you know, the ability to do the math. It was just what I was seeing. But the other thing that was amazing was that, in proof of this concept, is a experiment that was done in the spring, the report was released in the spring. And it involved, you might have heard about this, Jay, it involved using
particle accelerators?
No, vials. Chemistry vials.
Test tubes, you were thinking.
Test tubes, thank you.
I know, we're getting to that age, you know. The words are written on little cards and they're just all over the floor. I just can't think of it.
Test tube. So they had these two test tubes and they were sealed so that nothing could get into them, except that one of them, they both had water, but one of them had a trace amount of DNA in the water. Then they took and they wrapped these test tubes in a coil and put a low-level electric current through it. And what happened was that in 18 hours, the vial that did not have the DNA in it had DNA. And the way that I understood it, and I'm hoping I got it right, was that when you have the vial with the DNA and you put an electric current in it that then goes to the second vial, the electric current is acting like a field, okay? It's just a field connecting the two vials. And because of the resonating vibration of the DNA in the first test tube, the second test tube started to get the energetic vibration within it, and then that energetic vibration caused a material change in the hydrogen oxygen of the water to create DNA. And it's just a phenomenal amount of science that's coming out to say, you know, that's confirming that it's an energy universe. Everything is energy, and it's just geometry. If you understand geometry and the way that energy flows, you're going to get to the real crux of it all, which is at the quantum level, where all the power is, all the magic is, because the quantum level is really, to me, now that I look at it, you know, inside this massive Merkaba that's vibrating and creating all these ripples of energy that then can be manipulated into 3D reality. Well, our brain waves are also energy sources. So it makes sense that if you've got this kind of an operating procedure that's in place in the universe, then the human mind, that's why you can't have manifestation without the witnessing of a human mind to imprint it with that human energy form that says, no, this is we're going to bring this into our 3D reality. So that to me was the most stunning thing that I ran into this last week.
So, this is, I've come across this. Is this the one where they irradiated sand? Or is this a different experiment? They sealed the test tube and then irradiated it for hours and then brought it up to sort of glowing point and then let it cool down. And then it started, you know, you started seeing little creatures that looked like little spirals and like little living things. Little living skeleton things.
No, this one is a new one, and they were just using water. All it was water with. And he said that they only could use a trace amount of DNA. If they used too much DNA, it wouldn't work. And I think that goes down to what we found out with shungite, is that the smaller the particle of shungite, the greater the vibrational capability of that piece of shungite. It's almost like the closer you get to the quantum level, the more energetic everything becomes.
Well, that's like all homeopathy, isn't it? The less you use, the more potent it is.
Yes, I mean, homeopathy works on energies. And again, it's the same thing. You put a leaf in water, and what you've got is sort of the reverse situation. It's the leaf is put out, okay, the water picks up the frequency signature of the leaf that happens to be echinacea or some healing thing. So after that point, you're no longer working with the watered down 3D. You're working with the essence that's behind that 3D leaf. And so now you're carrying the pure essence of echinacea. into your system versus any kind of chemistry that could be made from the leaf of echinacea.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about making salt because I, as I was checking my chickens today, I got a great big buddleia in my face, and I was like, "Oh, hello!" It's a big fluffy lilac-y smelly thing. And Nikki's daughter actually last year took some buddleia, flowers. These are big flowery things that lots of florets on them, and put them in a bowl of water. And what you do, you just put them in the sun, and the sun probably energizes them, and they vibrate to do their thing, and the water catches them, as you say. What's weird in this world is the more you dilute it, the more potent it becomes, which is really good if you want to sell lots, because you can just dilute them and put them in tiny bottles, and then you dilute those bottles and it becomes even more powerful, and you dilute the drop from the bottle that they took, etc. It's bizarre, isn't it?
The thing about homeopathy is that you don't have to take any of it into your body. All you have to do is take a vial and put it in your pocket. You never have to take a pill of homeopathic medicine. You never have to take a swig of rescue remedy. All you have to do is carry the bottle around. It's energy. And when people start realizing, I said, take three drops of this. You don't have to take three drops of this. Put it in your pocket. It's going to continually give you the energy, because that's the way these things are. They're now little energy containers. You don't have to open them up and take them and ingest them. When I use rescue remedy on my animals, I put a little in my hand and I put it down on their bodies. I don't have to stick it down their throats. And the other thing with this whole concept of this energy is Walt developed what we call the water oxygenator, which is now nicknamed the turtle because it ended up looking like a turtle on a piece of board. But this water oxygenator, it was designed with Orgon concepts and powered by shungite, the S4 shungite in resin, and it has the essence of oxygen in it. Now, that goes back to the story that somebody posted on Facebook, but without any reference. And it took Walt a while before he found an actual reference to this particular very interesting situation in Switzerland. And this guy in Switzerland, they showed pictures of these lakes. I think it was three lakes that he did it in. But the one lake that I remember was just dirty. It was the water looked like brown. You couldn't see real water. It was like this gucky stuff. And three or four universities were on the lake actually studying the lake because it was in so much trouble. And this guy comes along and he says to them, well, if you just put these canisters in, and they were about 2 feet long, and they were probably probably 8 inches in diameter, and just drop them in the water and at certain kilometers from each other. These were large, large lakes. And don't open them. That was what he said. Don't open them. Well, of course, somebody finally opened them, but only after 4 weeks had passed and the water had gone from this yucky stuff into absolutely looking pristine. It was absolutely clear. And what they found inside of it was a piece of wood. And immediately Walt goes, well, it had to be an orgone. They had to imbue the orgone energy of oxygen into this piece of wood. And it was the energy signature that was saying to the water, make oxygen out of what you got, which is, of course, H2O. Make oxygen. Make a lot of oxygen. And once you put oxygen into an environment of water, it begins to clear out everything. There are oxygen systems for controlling your pool, your hot tub. But the only time I saw anybody using oxygen in a kind of like a big way was a study done by the feds, the U.S. federal, the Agriculture Department or something. But they had a toxic spill. And what they did was they put high oxygen content water in through the area of the toxins, and by God, they were getting rid of the toxins with just this. So Walt makes this device, and he threw it in the lake, and we've told you this story. The lake, Walt isn't real good about taking detailed readings and things. He makes them, and here, you know, you figure out what to do with it. So he just went down to the lake and threw it in. It was iced over. We had to throw it into the middle of this little pond. And when the ice got gone, he went down and took readings of the pond. Now, if he had taken the pH readings beforehand, it would probably, based on what it looked like, been more of the acidic level, but we didn't take them. But when he did take them, and by now there's no oil slick, there's no gunk slick, the ice had gone from brown to white before it melted. The and white ice indicates high oxygen in the water. Then the algae along the edge of the pond, that was virtually gone. But the pH had gone up into the alkaline. It was low alkaline the week he took it, and I made him go back for the second week, and it was up. It would even climbed higher. And the first week, the photographs of the test tube with the water in it showed little brown things floating in it, like little things floating in it. And the second one wasn't there. But there's, you know, pH changes by the day, by what time of day, and I don't know that he was paying attention to that or not. So we finally got some people to put it in their swimming pools, and Lou's is one of them. And immediately upon putting it in there, the water changes. You know, you can float easier. You can do all sorts of exercises in it that you before were a little more difficult. It's all because there's so much oxygen in the water; it's actually more buoyant. And in Lou's pool, the grandkids have been playing with a toy, and the toy it was a plastic toy. And it sunk to the, it was a truck, a little plastic truck, and it sunk to the bottom of the pool in the deep end. The next day they came out and the thing was floating on top of the water and there were bubbles all around it.
So, do you know, this is very interesting. Number one, Walt published a list of frequencies that went with some of his devices. He's, you know, he douses them out and, you know, he speaks and he gets the frequencies. And looking at this list, the first thing that I notice is that the frequency for oxygen says oxygen / abundance. And it's a really interesting thought that, yes, if you've got oxygen, you feel abundant. And in a place where you're less oxygen, that's where you feel closed in, etc. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah. What had happened is that we had made the abundance frequency and put it in a spiral. And then after we had a lot of these spirals, we began to think, and well, I knew that the Keys of Enoch had said that in the future, sound would be the healing modality. Sound, color, and light. And so I was like, oh, well, that's really interesting that we've got this futuristic kind of thing. What if we took the frequency, because the length of the coil, you know, of the wire gives you the frequency. What if we took those frequencies and made them into tones? So he had the abundancy frequency in the spiral. And then when he was making the oxygen one, and he comes up with the number of how the length of it is, he went, I've seen that before. And he looked in his chart and he found the abundance one. So yeah, we were both kind of like, oh wow, that really makes sense, just like you said. So we've got like hemp, the hemp frequency, a tone. And what he's doing now is that he's so into the research thing that he, I gotta close down. I think this is Facebook that keeps tweaking me.
You got a beep. That sounds like, is that Messenger? I haven't heard that sound for a long, long time. This is like, oh, wow. You're on AOL, aren't you?
No, but it did sound like the AOL. Yeah. You can mail. That's a flashback, isn't it?
Indeed.
But anyway, during his research, he found out that if you put if you're curing resin, you can put a sound on, and the resin will actually pick up the vibration of the sound. So he's now working with adding these sounds to different resin products that we have. Like, for instance, we've got a friend of mine has got a 14-acre pond behind his house. And why I didn't remember this, I don't know. But anyway, he's taking, he's got meters, he's going to take the readings beforehand and check it continually. But because it was such a, well, what it was is that in Florida, they would dig down into the ground and open pit mining kind of thing to get limestone. And they get down so far and the water table starts filling up the mine. So it got to the point where they couldn't pump it as fast as it was coming in, and they left it and let it fill up. And so this lake is really an old limestone mine. So I'm assuming it's very hard water. I said, let's not worry with the testing of the hardness because it's going to be very hard. If everything else works, then we'll test the hardness. And if it's soft, well, we know that limestone is very hard water. So anyway, so he decided that because he knew that this particular one was not going into a swimming pool, he added the vibration of oxygen into the curing of the device. So I'm really excited. This week they should get it in the lake, and if it works the way that we believe it'll work, they should get some kind of an indicator within a matter of days. And by 4 weeks that pond should be absolutely pristine. That's what I'm saying. But again, I wouldn't have said that before I watched David's stuff, because I'm going, no, I am right. You know, I mean, it's one thing to get intuitively certain things, pictures in your head, and it's another to have quantum physicists who are telling you, no, it's right because of these reasons. You know, and so it's been a very exciting week. And
always nice to get a bit of affirmation from a nuclear physicist, from a quantum physicist.
Oh, absolutely.
I always say. So what else has happened this week? What has been the this Harold Kautz Bella? You were discussing aspects of this last week, but I mean, it's a big subject. Did you actually get to watch the video at all?
The video that we worked with was the one with David Griffin and Miles. Oh gosh, you know Miles.
Oh, Johnson. Miles Johnson, yeah.
Johnson, yes.
Bless
you. That's the video that we looked at. Mona had given it. Mona heard us on after Simon's show. We have that show. Yep. We three of us talk about what Simon just said, mm-hmm. And Mona had heard us, and I kept saying, "What's? Do you guys know anything about this black goo?" Because Simon said there were two versions of it, one natural to Earth, and the other one being that it's something that was put here by ETs that can create a terraforming situation.
Yes.
So that's what that's all I knew. And Mona sent him this really great video to Walt, and Walt sent it to me. So that was what we based our discussion on, was that particular one where they talk about the Falkland Islands and the war there and Thule, the island of Thule, and the fact that there were blue ETs that were trying to get this stuff out of there and working with the Argentinians, and then the British decided, no, we don't want you to do this. It's probably something that we can use in some kind of corporate, you know, do something with it so we can make more money. And so, and David Griffin kept saying, it was all about corporation. It was corporation stuff. It wasn't anything to do with nationalistic, oh, they're taking our property type of thing.
Mm.
And then I'm summarizing it intensely.
Yeah, yeah,
they basically took they got a hold of some of the black goo that's artificial, and they brought it over to Marconi Electronics. And from the point that this would have been put into the Marconi environment, the Marconi people realized that they needed computer people, and this was early in the game, this was in the early 80s, 82, 84, 86, you know, that they were needing computer people that were gamers, that were trying to work with creating, you know, simulations and that sort of thing, so that they could create some kind of a computer simulation that would allow them to communicate with this black goo so that they could, they wanted to put it in hydraulic systems or something, but, you know, that was the cover story. They were doing other things with it. So they would have had to have gotten young people who were good in computers. And so you take somebody off the street that happens to be a computer geek, and you tell them, and this is, remember, again, in the 80s, and you tell them, well, we got this stuff, but it was put here by ETs, and the ETs are trying to take it, and we want... I mean, right then and there, you got a problem with that guy's mind, because you've just blown his reality to shit.
Fuses later.
You know, I mean,
all the way down to the corpus callosum, yeah.
You know, like, what? And plus the fact that you're working now in one of the biggest companies in the world, and they're telling you that this is real. So, to me, that sets up a lot of people for, A, not being able to handle it and having a nervous breakdown, B, not being able to handle it and deciding to go public, in which case you're going to get murdered. But the other thing is would that give you 25 people in that very small group of people who end up committing suicide? Now, two of them disappeared. 23 of them, they got the dead bodies. Two of them disappeared. But the guy that wrote the book, Verdict In or something like that, and I can't remember his name right now, but he was an editor for a computer magazine. So he kept seeing that Marconi has another suicide, and they were coming across his desk, and finally he decided to investigate it, and that's the reason that we know that really that all of this was happening. So the one thing is that you just can't handle it, so you commit suicide. The other is that you're murdered because you're about to go public. And the third thing is you're messing around with some kind of a sentient being that may have fought back. And we know mind control is really not that difficult. And they may have been forced to commit suicide. Because the even the suicides themselves were, for the most part, pretty weird. Like one guy, I hate to even tell you the story, but so you understand how bizarre it was, one guy tied a rope to a telephone pole, tied it around his neck, got in his car and gunned it. Decapitated himself. Now, that's a hell of a way to commit suicide.
Holy crap. That's now, yeah, exactly. That's a hell of a way. So, what is going on with this stuff? Now, I remember back in the 90s, there was a show, X-Files, right? And on the X-Files, it was the star of the show. And nobody ever said a word about it, but it was there all the way through, this black goo. And then there was Twin Peaks. I don't know if you ever saw Twin Peaks, but in the Glastonbury Grove, it was, of the sycamore trees, was the portal, the gateway. And when they looked at the in the fire pit, for some reason, was this black oil. And I'm just wondering if that's the same stuff.
Well, Prometheus, another movie out there.
Oh, yeah, there you go, Prometheus.
Yeah, they talked about that. That in Prometheus, in the beginning of it, the guy drinks the black goo, and does something to the DNA, and you know, and then the whole story is about, you know, them going and finding the black goo and what it's doing. So I mean, apparently this black goo story has been around for a while. I missed it. I got to tell you, if I hadn't heard it on Simon, I wouldn't have paid any attention to it. But once it got to my head, it was really into my head.
Well, there was something that I saw about it. Now, I can't remember the name. And he was some sort of like an English super soldier. He was an English fellow. Anyway, it's one of the Miles Johnson's tapes. And he's sitting in the... And he's telling us about... He was in a hotel. And... at the back of the hotel, in London, it's very higgledy-piggledy, and there's all these old places that have never been, like, rebuilt, you know, from 300, 400 years ago. And they've got, like, old open sewers that flow through the places that have never been... Anyway, so there's this hotel, and there's this old open sewer that kind of that somehow has a riser that comes up through the past this window. And he was saying that this stuff came up through the water vapor... from the sewers, and that it was that his story was that it had been handled by some government scientist who couldn't do anything with it, so they flushed it down the toilet. What a good idea.
I remembered
idea.
You telling us that, and it was like,
You remember that a long time ago, didn't I?
Well, yeah, but you mentioned it on the show the other night, and I was like, okay, so... Well, then, I mean, I highly recommend people go and look at this thing with this tape, because then the guy goes into the discussion about the Gulf of Mexico. Did you run into that information?
Okay, so we got two black goos.
Yes.
Gaia's goo and E.T. goo, let's call it that for the moment. And Gaia's goo comes from the Gulf? Or well, is that the E.T. goo? Because isn't the Gulf the place where the meteor hit years ago, 65 million years ago, that cracked open the planet?
Yes, and David was talking about that, in that perhaps this wasn't natural. Perhaps it was something that was sent in to, A, get rid of the dinosaurs, and, B, to put this terraforming stuff into the environment of Earth, that they could untap at any time by frequency, that it would come alive with frequency. Supposedly, the black goo by the ETs, well, probably black goo in either form, is fairly stable when it's under pressure and cold water, but that when it gets into salt water, it acts like a catalyst, and it starts to morph and do all sorts of bizarre things. What happened was that at the time of the Deep Sea Horizon disaster, I heard there was a lot of conversation about what they were calling abiotic oil, and that, because it didn't make any sense to me that you would drill down that deep for oil, that it didn't seem to be cost effective. And so I knew they had to be going after oil that was different than the oil like fracking, or, you know, just in a pocket someplace, because it was truly an amazing thing they were trying to do. So then I start hearing about abiotic oil, and abiotic oil is the brainchild of the Russians, and they have actually said that the concept of biotic oil, where you got vegetation that starts to disintegrate and then it gets the composition that ends up becoming oil, and so you have pockets of it in Saudi Arabia or wherever else, that's biotic oil. And the Russians were saying that's just junk science, that doesn't make any sense. And so for decades they have been the proponents of this abiotic oil, that they say is a natural reoccurring substance that Mother Earth, Gaia, creates in order to do something. I'm not sure what they're saying it is. But good old Walt, the shaman, taking a shamanic journey for somebody, got hijacked. And, you know, he doesn't know. I mean, at this point, we really didn't know that much at all about the oil. One of the reasons we pursued it was because of this trip. And he was the one that was like, is there two types? Because he didn't really listen I guess he listened to what Simon said, but he realized that there seemed to be two of these things. So that's when his only interpretation of what he was seeing was that the natural Gaia oil was something connected to like a lymphatic system in the planet, that it was able to, just like your lymph glands take in poisons and toxins and then they dispel them from the body, that was something that was the connection he made. So then he tells me this, and I'm thinking about, okay, what's this abiotic oil really about? And I could see the connection, how he would make that interpretation that may be very accurate, in that this layer of the abiotic oil is deep under the crust, or maybe between the crust and the mantle. And I consider, when I first heard about it, I thought of it as like some kind of a system, like an oil system, so that the top layer of the Earth could actually move and rotate around the core. That it would keep the core, I mean, because the Earth moves, the plates, I mean, they're all moving. What's allowing that to happen?
Here's my thing. Let me just step in here, because I have a radical view of the planetary tectonic system,
that I'd like to... I've probably spoken about it before, haven't I? To me, the Earth is expanding. It's like an eggshell that has some hard pieces, and the Earth used to be about half the size that it was. And the things that we call continents are like the cracked eggshell. The inside has been swelling up. And you can see the evidence of this is essentially the rifts that are in all these places that meet in, where is it? Where's that place? Not Tierra del Fuego. That place where the MH17... Anyway, that place in the Pacific. Anyway, there's a point when all these rifts meet. What is a rift? A rift is a place where all this stuff is, where the magma's pouring out and then cooling down under the water.
But the concept of the Earth expanding, happening to be in a position to expand, really comes from the concept of, and we've talked about this, you and I, many times, about the progression, the equinox, you know, how everything is, you got 26,000 years that we travel. And every time we get back into the same position in the universe, we are looking right directly at the central part of the galaxy, which is, in effect, a black hole. And the black hole, we know it to pull in light, but what we're not seeing, that I'm sensing, is that as you pull in the light and the material stuff into the black hole, there is also energy being given off by the black hole that then is sent out into the rest of the galaxy. So when we get here, we all of a sudden are in this different environment of energies, of gas, of, there's a tremendous amount of carbon, which is the building life, the building blocks of life. So when we get into this particular spot with all this dust and everything else, the sun takes it in and uses it as fuel. And that's why right now we have a white sun, not a yellow sun. And the sun expands. Now, if the universe is built on geometry, you're always going to be required just to keep the same relationship. So if the sun suddenly starts getting bigger, because it's pulling in all this stuff, the Earth and all of the rest of the solar system is going to move away, and they're individually going to get bigger to, again, duplicate, even in a bigger size, the geometry that has got to be always stable. So the Earth has got to be able to expand. And if you do go back and look at how the continents were all together and everything, and you just think of it being like, I mean, if you took and you drew a picture of the that one, I forget what they call it, you know, the one continent that was there originally. I forget what they call it.
Oh, Pangaea. Yeah, I've never, you see, I could never understand. Like, I'm not stupid. Sometimes I am. Yeah, sometimes I am. But, like, most of the time, like, okay, so a large of the time. All right, well, anyway, looking at the Earth, I could never get the whole continental drift thing. Like, what was pushing all this stuff with such force? I wonder what that.
Well, if you drew that on a balloon.
Exactly. Now here's my simile. If you take a balloon, blow it up about halfway until it's nice and round, and then dip it in paint. Let the paint dry and then blow it up some more. What you see is exactly what happens to the planet. You can make planets like that. There you go.
That's a great explanation.
Party trick. Yeah. So the next question is, what makes the thing expand?
The fact that the sun got bigger because it was taking in all of this energy that's right here in this particular area that we now find ourselves again.
And therefore so does the Earth.
And so does the Earth. Yes, but you have to it's all based on that geometry. Mm-hmm. The Earth is a relation. If you look, well, you know this, it's like musical chords.
But the relation. Yes, it's also the geometry that's on your side. You know, that cube octahedron thing.
Yeah, the Genesis.
Still a terrible crystal. Name for it.
The Genesis crystal.
Yes.
And that's the basic structure in the DNA that David talks about too. that's what the DNA is following. It's following the Genesis crystal formation, and it just, the energy sort of wraps itself around that geometry. But it is all geometry. So if you have to have a specific relationship between the distance and the size of the Earth and the Sun and all the other planets and everything else, then if you're feeding energy into the Sun and the Sun is getting bigger, the Earth is in the same energy. It can also absorb that energy and get bigger too, and move away from the Sun to keep the relationship. That's the expansion of the universe, is right there, is you're expanding the geometry.
So, it's about scale. And what's interesting is when you scale geometry, in the same reason, probably for exactly the same universal reason, that when you scale energy in an atom, it snaps into the next place, and that's what they call a quantum leap. That's what quantums are, quanta. They're things, they're discrete. It's like you add energy and energy and energy, and then suddenly it snaps into the next size. It doesn't grow slowly. And this has been also the case of Earth history, it seems. It's not like something happens and then slowly something happens. It's just like something happens and then everything recovers and it builds up and then something else happens and we recover, you know.
Well, yeah.
Because that's the way our lives are, isn't it? Isn't that what's happened to you and me in our lives?
As above, so below.
As within, so without, you know. And for some reason, I'm not getting bigger anymore. So I'm probably on the other way. So interesting.
Well, I'm not getting bigger. I'm probably shrinking.
Yeah.
You know, comparatively. But the key to it is like, and the mathematics, I mean, I've always been fond of mathematics, but that was because I sort of all knew it. It was just part of I knew it. Like when I was taking calculus.
Calcium, yes. Calculus. I have a calcium, calcium exam.
Yeah, I had algebra and calculus by the same professor. And what would happen is that I would go into his class and I would put my head down and I would take a nap. And if he was showing a new concept, he would walk over and he'd wake me up and I'd look at the board and I'd go, okay. And I never had to think about it. It was always there. Now I can't. Now at the time too, I was having trouble with 2 and 2 is 4. You know, 2 times 4 is 8. That stuff was baffling to me, but I could see the higher science, easy, the math. But what happens is that now, as I'm older and my brain doesn't, you know, seem to have this ability to completely grasp it in one, boom, got it, you know, I'm being forced to actually understand the mechanisms behind it. So one of the fascinating things that I got into was, and I don't remember who it was that was explaining it, but the relationship of the how far away the planets are in their orbits from the Earth, I mean from the Sun. And so when this guy was able to determine that there was a mathematical equation that dictated where those orbits would be, and then in the astral belt the math said there should be another planet here and there wasn't, and that's one of the biggest proofs we have that there was another planet in the solar system that got destroyed and ended up as the astral belt, was the mathematics saying that there should be another planet orbiting here because of the geometry.
Interesting, isn't it? Johann Kepler, I think, is his name, and they named a craft after him. We're going to send you right out to the outside of go away, just go as far as you want to go, as far as you can go away, don't come back. Anyway, I think that's what they did to Kepler, the Kepler thing. Anyway, the interesting thing about that is the planet that was there before. Let's talk about that after a break. What do you fancy?
Well, we made it to the first hour.
Yeah, we're doing well. There we go. Oh, yeah, let's have some Eagles. Oh, my favorite. I had this song that went through my head, I can't remember, it must have been about 4 weeks.
It was torturing me.
Nung Maste, sisters and brothers. Here we are at the First Church of Nung.
Just because nobody's mentioned it today, and somebody mentioned it in the chat room. Don't mention it. Don't mention the Nung. I think I got away with it.
Ha, no, you didn't.
A Nung Fest chocolate covered
crisp. Nung Foo Fighters.
To Nung Foo Fighters. That's right, you were saying. Here we are back at the ranch. Now, I said we were going to talk about something on the beginning of the break.
Oh shoot! Was I supposed to remember that?
Were you? Was I? Maybe it'll come back to us. Let's play.
We were talking about planetary expansion.
Yes.
At Kepler.
Yes. And therefore the story of Maldek.
Oh, right. Yes. Good.
Thank you. We picked up the thread. The story of Maldek. Once upon a time, there was a large water planet. Blue, green, fish, aquatic ape-type people, Sasquatch-type people, all sorts of things. Fish, frogs, trees. But, you know, mostly fish, frogs, aquatic. And what happened, and this seems to is about 200 million years ago. This is from what Simon's told me. This is a story that we've had in a conversation. But that also has some sort of connection. Anyway, there was a reptilian base inside this planet, and it was used as a staging post to govern this galaxy. Someone in the Pleiadian faction that were fighting against the reptilians had the bright idea of taking that base out. And it was. Have you ever seen The Italian Job?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know that famous line?
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Yes. As opposed to blowing the whole bloody thing up, you know. I think that sort of situation happens because, you know, space is a place where just things get amplified, I would imagine. You know, if you put the wrong paw somewhere, it's, you know, you're going to tread on a big snake or something, you know, a great big space snake. Anyway.
Now, let me ask you, because I know the story you're telling about the Palladians going after a reptilian base and getting permission to do it because no negotiations were working and they were running havoc, so they were going to take them out. But I heard that was on Mars and that's why they have the nuclear signature on the soil there, and that's why that big chunk of Mars is missing.
Well,
I heard that the planet was destroyed by something that they did on the planet.
All right. Well, there's
that's what I'm remembering.
Right. So there's various ideas. Now, well, so here's the thing about Mars is that Mars was in the way of the force of the explosion. That explosion was so big that it ripped, like, imagine it looked like an enormous explosion, like a bomb going off next to you. It'll take off your hair and take everything that is, like, not, like, rock and stuff. And I believe that that's what happened to Mars.
That's the way I had initially heard it.
Right.
But then there was the scientist who looked at the samples they had gotten back from Mars from U.S. missions, and based on what he was seeing, could prove that there was some nuclear thing had happened there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why the other one made sense. But, however, the Palladians have been carrying this tremendous amount of guilt for the amount of deaths that occurred. And it makes sense to me that it was, in fact, the planet and not Mars, because, like I say, I agree with you that chunks of this stuff became the astral belt, but chunks of it hit Mars, blew off its
That sounds more likely
yeah. to me. However, because I feel a connection to the Palladians, and I was like, oh wow, let me look at that. I did a remote view of what happened, because time doesn't exist. And in reality, what I saw happen was that they came in with this weapon of a known yield. And if you're using nuclear, we know that sometimes they can jump into a massive amount of yield that was not expected. But that this particular one operated exactly as it should have. However, there were major galactic sorcerers that knew about this and had set an etheric trap so that when the bomb went off, it actually was an etheric explosion that occurred, more so than a 3D explosion, but the etheric was what ripped everything apart. That's what I got in a remote viewing.
Wow.
Now, the reason I feel confident of that is that when we just did it recently, because we've been working with the Jin Nation is now free. And Walt said to me, "Are there djinns on Mars?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And so I was connected with the djinn, here, and I was connected with Gaia because we were doing this releasing certain djinns, because we freed everybody in the cavern in the Jin Nation. We freed everybody that was sort of out there and kind of captured, but outside of the Iron Ring. Nobody remembered the Iron Rings until the djinn said to me, "We did a head count, we're missing djinn." And I'm going like, okay, but that was the reason I even asked that question, was because Walt had asked me, "Did we free the djinn that's in the Iron Rings?" Because you remember how, the dog has got the cat's food, damn. Okay.
I'll tell you.
I hear that bowl rattle, and then I realized I'd put it down for the cat because he was going to jump up in my lap if I didn't. Anyway, so back to the djinn. So I'm connected to the djinn, asking them the question about the Iron Ring. Are they trapped in the Iron Ring? And we went through this whole thing about getting them free without destroying them. How do you destroy the ring without destroying them? It was interesting. We'll tell about it. But anyway, and so I asked the question, are there djinn on Mars? And they said no. And so I went to, I projected to Mars, and I'm going like, yeah, there's no djinn. So then I connected with Terra, who is the Gaia's counterpart there. She's now known as Terra. I don't know why. But Terra is what we know her as. And I was asking about it, and she confirmed that there was a djinn-like nation on Mars. But that when this thing we're talking about, the planet or whatever, when the I just got it as the explosion happened, the etheric rip was so devastating that these beings were all killed. So, I'll just tell the story because I don't care how crazy people think I am.
No. Please tell this story because it's nourishing. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I'm reporting this. Now, I don't go into a deep trance at all when I'm doing these things. What I'm doing is I'm focusing so much in my conscious mind that it looks trance-like, because just like when you're reading something and you're so lost in it that somebody says something to you and you don't even hear them. That's the kind of focus that I have, and I'm trying to connect with at that point the djinn here to get some confirmation and Terra on, what's really happening. And so Walt says to me, because Walt is like, he just comes up with the most bizarre concepts that absolutely are right. And he said to me, so the Mars djinn are all gone in the present. And I said, yes. And it was caused because of a past event. And I said, yes. And he said, well, then can't Terra go back to that point in time and take them into the future before they're destroyed? And so I asked, and we got, yes, we can do this. And the next thing I know, terrorists immediately started to change the vibration of the planet. And I know I was, and he can remember what I say better than I can, but I remember trying to describe what I was seeing, and what I was seeing is that she was changing the frequency back into the time just before the explosion. And then I could see her like wrap herself around these energy bodies and just kind of like protect them in a like a bubble. And then there was this huge explosion thing happening, and the next thing I know, she's got them, like she's captured them and she's brought them back into the future. And so now I'm looking at all of these little creatures that look like Casper the Ghost. And I mean, our djinn are big and, you know, black and scary kind of looking. You know, they're lovely people. They're like family. Walt and I just, someday if we disappear, it's because we're living with a djinn. They're that nice. But these ones on Mars were all these like white ghost-like things. And when I focused on them, the white wasn't so much white as it was like, flashes or crystals or of different colors that were pastel, that when looked from afar looked more white, but when you got on top of them, and so Walt says, is it a crystalline being? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess so, because there was all these miniature, like diamond little colored things that were floating around them. And our djinn called them like the little brother, the little sister. It's like they have the same relationship to the planet in that they're living more in the etheric than the 3D. They affect the 3D, but they're basically etheric beings. That compared to an elemental that is a 3D, more 3D than etheric, and an elemental works with, you know, nature, helping nature, plants, and it might be the consciousness of the plants. I'm not exactly sure. The soul of the plants, the different elementals, because they tell you that the more variety of plants that you put into your yard, the more variety of elementals will come and live in your yard. And that comes from ancient Celtic belief systems. But anyway, yeah. So now the Tara has djinn back again, and this was the funniest thing, because I started realizing, okay, because it's hard to explain. We're building a new reality both here on Earth and over there on Mars. And so you've got two realities, the old reality and the new reality. And the new reality and the old realities are merging very quickly. And what's happening is that sometimes I have to shift from the new reality to the old reality to see what is happening over there. And what was happening over there is that the reptilian creatures there and the mantis kind of creatures there were the ones that I sort of focused in on. They were all going like, what the hell, what the hell? Like they had felt the shift in the old world, the old Mars, the old reality of Mars. And it was very interesting because the vast majority of these people were like, this is a good thing, whereas some of them were very fearful. You know, it was like really interesting to me. But all of a sudden, I remember saying this to Walt, because it actually brought me into the present. I said something like, I was explaining what I was seeing, and all of a sudden I said, but not those damn humans, they're so dense. You know, and I laughed because I said, I don't know where that came from. I said it was somebody was thinking that, and I don't know if it was djinn or terror or I don't know who it was, but the humans apparently did not perceive that there had been a massive energetic change to the present day Mars because of that event. So either a fiction of imagination, but a hell of a good story.
Well, so to that end, is it possible to therefore repair the etheric body of Maldek? Heal the etheric body of Maldek so it may return to being a planet again?
Yes. That's what I'm getting, yes.
Okay.
But it would take a similar situation in that you'd have to somehow be able to isolate that etheric blueprint and get it to the future, beyond the point of the destruction of it. Because that was the key. She went back in time and just pulled them in. You know, she didn't go through time. She just went to a point that this happened, grabbed them, and then went back to the point that she wanted them, which was the present, Tara.
Now, so, I've had Bartis on the show talking about timeline wars and things that where entire timelines have been kind of unpicked because they figured out how to unhook people from their DNA. Very crazy and bizarre wars and ancient conflicts that he speaks about. Yeah, a bit beyond me usually. But anyway, this one. We're looking at healing the jinn. Now, not everybody knew about the jinn. You know, I knew a little bit about jinn from my Eastern friends, but and the old Indian story and things. But the idea of other dimensional beings living on this planet that have somehow been sidelined by the human race, or those who have been manipulating the human race, whoever they may be, and I think it now seems to be several, because we got the Velon, we got the Archons, we got the Reptilians, we got the Anunnaki, we got the good Anunnaki, we got the bad Anunnaki, we got the good Titans, we got the bad Titans. So it just seems like a lot of things have been hijacked and history has been rewritten by the people who could get inside it somehow.
Well, you know, I was focusing in on that sort of concept of, well, again, back to Simon. Simon was saying that the DNA strands that we have, that, like, we've got the 12 DNA strands that are not all active, but they're becoming active, that they actually were embedded in the human matrix based on genetic engineering by different soul groups, star groups, star families, okay? And that's why when we were on with Tolik, and I was explaining what Simon had said, and Tolik went, you'll remember, he said, oh, wow. And I felt like when he did this, that he had not made that. I don't follow Tolik like a lot. I just know of him and basically what his messages are. But I don't really study him. So I don't know if he ever talked about this in any of his talks. I got the feeling he had not said anything about it. But he said to us, do you know that the rest of the universe thinks of humanity as some kind of like nobles? That they are admired as if you were looking at a noble. There's some bloodline weirdness that makes humans superior, and I felt like he had never talked about it before, but because of what Simon said, it made sense. Because you can't, it comes down to this, all right. If all of this war that we've been talking about, that none of us, I think, could even have imagined 5 years ago, the extent of what we're seeing now, well, maybe some of them, because some of them did write about it. I'm trying to think of who it was.
One moment. Stand by, you're on the air. Please turn off your radio and mute yourself if you can. Thank you. We'll come to you in a second.
So if you're a consciousness, a creator consciousness like Gaia, and all you've seen in your millions and millions of years of existence is war. War between this one, war between that one, okay? And you're fed up with it. You think to yourself, well, what if I created a being that could be a peacemaker, that could get beyond this crazy, you know, cutthroat war thing that's been going on for millions of years? At that point, you say, okay, well, how do we, because one thing I've learned in the 3D is you need a storyline. So you say, okay, what's the storyline? Well, the storyline is that Gaia puts out a beacon and attracts all these ETs, and they all come here and they all muck with the human being's DNA, creating a special being, a being that has the DNA of all the people that have been fighting. And that in 2015, these people suddenly began to understand who and what they are, because they were in an area of the universe, of the galaxy, that is full of this energy that suddenly rebuilds all 12 strands of the DNA. so that now you've got one species that's got the bloodline of them all. One species that can talk and say, wait a minute, I'm your family. I'm your family, I'm your family, I'm your family, I'm your family. You all mucked with me. I've got you all in me. You all now have to listen to me because I'm part of your family. And it may be that this all comes back down to the fact that Gaia and the rest of the creator gods of the galaxy were just sick and tired of all the war. So they created somebody special called the human of the 21st century. That's what I'm liking that story.
I like that too. We have a caller. Nobody ever calls us. Hello, caller 651. Who's speaking and where are you?
They just hung up.
Oh, for crying out loud. As soon as I bring them attention. Oh,
yeah.
They're shy. Hang on, let's call them back. Just call them back.
Well, they called us. We'll call them back.
Yeah, we'll call them back. Hey, don't call me. We'll call you. Oh, hee-hee.
Oh, see, they know it's us.
Yeah, yeah. It's us calling.
We're going to get
some.
Hello. Hello.
You have reached 336-8093.
Oh.
Sorry I'm not around to take this call.
You're not around.
But if you would so kindly leave your message along with your phone number, I will get back to you.
They don't know it's you.
Shall we leave a message? No, no, no.
Let's leave a message.
Yeah, let's... Hello, you're on the air. This is Wolf Spirit Radio, and we're just calling you back. So we just want to say hello and call us back and say hello. You had to wait, but Nancy was just finishing, I thought, though. So, we'll deal with it. Hello, come in. Come, call us back. Crazy. Anyway, oh, this is the way. So what's that Mona's just put in there? There's a great big, there's a YouTube with a thing on it. Is that like walking legs? I got like high heels or something. Anyway, cat energies. So, Nancy, you're still with me, yes?
Oh yeah, I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. So we're
hard to get rid of.
Oh, like my chickens. Do you remember I used to have this, there was this chicken that, I mean, she's still there. She moved in. She used to come to my house every day. And went
so
away
now
every
she
day.
See her permanently?
Yeah, she moved into the coop, yeah. She's Roger's girlfriend. Because she's a red, you see. I had two little greys, little grey speckled, and they're kind of like, you know, bantams, little ones. And Tasty, Nikki called her Tasty, cruelly. And Roger are kind of, they're both reds, you see, they're the sort of Rhode Island type. And so they hang out together because they're reds. Chicken are, it's a terrible society. They're really, you know, they're really racist. They don't like anybody. They're xenophobic against everything. And they're scared of everything, you know. Like the chicken.
I think this has the makings of a book.
Chicken world. Come to live in chicken world and get pecked to death. Yeah. I mean, poor little... I mean, what do you call her? Peckity, I call her. She's the only one left. She's been terribly traumatized. And she's got, like... they peck her back. They peck the feathers off her back. Both of them. They really... it's horrible. I might have to, you know, put her in her own little coop so that she can recover. Recovery coop.
I know some of the things that animals do to each other is just pathetic. They're almost like humans, you know. And then there's things that they do that are just absolutely beautiful. So I don't think there's much difference between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. Oh, but I'll tell you something, Jay. I don't know if you can see that over there yet, but for people in the States on AMC television, they've got a new series called Humans. Have you heard anything about it?
Humans. No.
Oh, wow. Well, it's actually, tonight is playing the 7th episode of it. But yesterday, there wasn't anything on. I needed an hour break. I said, oh, let me just, somebody had mentioned this, and so I go to the, you know, on-demand thing, and I look at it. Well, that was at 7 o'clock. At 2:30 in the morning, I finished the 6th episode. I could not stop. It was so unbelievably compelling. It is about artificial intelligence. It's about having robots that will come in and act like your nanny and your house cleaner and, you know, keeping track of just anything you want. But in the midst of this, some of these scents, they call them, like, you know, synthetic, end up being conscious. And the characters are compelling. The script holds together unbelievably well. I went through 6 episodes and didn't find anything that really I found bothersome. And it is either one of the greatest disclosure events or one of the greatest propaganda events that I've ever gotten involved in. There were times where I was yelling at the thing, my God, this is scary as shit, because they had manipulated me into believing that it was better to be an artificial intelligence than a human. You know, by the very way that they were explaining certain things. And then you'd get another character's perspective and you'd go the other way. It was like back and forth and back and forth. I highly recommend it. I don't know who wins until the end of the series, but anybody that can, AMC, it's actually Eastern tonight, starts at 9 o'clock, but it's the 7th episode. You don't want to do that. This is not one of those shows. You really have to go from one to, you know, the whole series. But I highly recommend it. And again, that the artificial intelligence question is something that's only really reared its head in the last 2 years, and it seems to be getting at more and more, because now you're getting these, you know, mass media presentations of, no, don't you think it'd be a good idea to be able to remember everything and to, you know, be stronger, and you don't have to die, you just get a little upgrade in your system, and oh, maybe that's, you know, and it also occurred to me that that's probably exactly what's happening anyway, that, you know, like people get afraid of death. And so, oh, well, I want to live forever, and I don't want to die. Well, you do live forever, and you don't die. You just change bodies. You know? It's like, do you really want to stay in that one puny body forever?
Get me out of this one.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
It's like, well, you know, did you ever see the film with Robin Williams, the 200-year-old man?
No.
Well, that's exactly that. He was 200 years old because by the time he got to 200 years, every part of his body had been replaced by some synthetic. And so he'd been completely out. There wasn't a very, I don't know what was left. I really don't. Maybe the back of the tongue or the pineal gland, whatever. But everything had been replaced, and he ends up 200 years old.
But was it him? You know, that I know that this humans thing has
exactly.
Got to get into the question of the soul.
Well, you know, and here it is. You know, I have a computer, right? You have a laptop. Everybody has their computers. And after a while, your impression is made on them. You know, you set up your custom picture, your colors, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, like a car, the way you drive gets imprinted on the car. You know, certain gears are worn in a particular way, like shoes get worn in a particular way. You know, we put our imprint onto the world. What happens when you reinstall the system? You get the same system, the same box, same functionality, doing the same, but its personalization has been wiped clean.
Well, if you got Windows, you're going to have another operating system.
If you got Windows, it's not just not going to work. Oh, my God. Yeah, and by the way, people, why would anybody give away software that they previously charged, like, $120 for free? Why would they do that? Why would they suddenly want to do that? Why would they suddenly want to give things away for free?
Are you talking about Windows 10?
Windows 10, yeah.
What happened to Windows 9?
Well, because Windows started out as Windows 95, and then, well, actually started out as Windows 3.1, the first one that got big
big around the offices, and then it becomes Windows 95, and then it becomes Windows 98, and then it becomes Windows 2000, and then become Windows XP, that then became etc. Anyway, that wasn't very interesting, but that's what, because so it went 95, 98, and it was always referred to as Windows 9X. So any time that they want to bring out a system that is now, you know, they're now naming it when did it become, you know, when did it become Windows 7? You know, why 7? Why not 3? You know, what the heck with those numbers?
I think it was some astronomical alignment of something.
It's rubbish. It's crazy. Just like Bill Gates. He's insane, people. He makes it more difficult. Every time the operating system is so-called upgraded, it makes it... I'm just going to have a quick Windows rant here. Every time the operating system is upgraded, it takes an extra layer of one or two clicks and, obviously, the wait for the little panel to come up to get to where you were when you could do one click in the first place, in original Windows. I don't want it to change. I don't need it to change. Why do I have to change?
So you will buy another one because they're going to stop supporting the old one.
I don't
so
buy
that
computers.
You're forced into buying the next one.
I don't buy computers. I don't.
No. Oh, you don't.
No.
That's right. But still, they stop supporting old programs.
I know, and that's horrible for people like me who recycle things. I recycle computers, by the way. I don't steal them. Do I? apart from this one, which... which Dave sent me some money about a month before he passed away. I said, buy a new computer. And I went, why? Buy a new computer. Okay. So I bought a new computer. That's this one here. But still.
He did have the utmost regard for you. I listened to some things where he was really, really... There's this guy, Jeremy Perrault, in Scotland, and, you know, he's he'd go off on how much he thought of you as a technician and as a person.
Bless his heart.
Just thought I'd throw that in.
Brother of another mother. You know, and it's been hard. It's like, I've had to do all this stuff, and it's all been filling my head. And I had some feelings back there. Still got that to deal with. I got some more stuff. Yeah. It's all it's like a credit card, isn't it? You eventually have to pay the bill on the card.
Well, I love the fact that he seems to be so prevalently involved with us still. I mean, here he is on transition to the faster-than-light speeds, and he could do anything that he just decides to do, but he's decided to hang around. He's decided, what he said was, I decided not to decide, but he's hanging around because of all the places he could be, this is the most interesting. And I think that anybody out there who is alive and awake should be really, really into how amazing this whole story is, and to feel very bad for have compassion for all those other people that are sitting asleep in a theater with the best movie that's ever been made on the screen.
Acting in our own brains. See, this is, and here's the thing. Going back to this fantastic story that you brought before. Because I collect creation stories these days, somewhere in the, you know, in there's a great puzzle, and it's just finding where the corners are and where the edges of the, maybe there aren't any edges, maybe it's a three-dimensional or multi-dimensional, let's not go there, but there's a puzzle, and we've all got pieces, and we all occasionally come up with these nuggets when certain bits come together, you know, like we figured out that there were Nazi time travelers that were fucking things up. And now it turns out that there's all Velon time travelers that have been messing things up, and who knows who else, you know.
Well,
because
it's conceivable.
Of time and weird stuff, you know, like
it's conceivable that we are screwing with it now. In our heads. We just did. We just took the djinn of Mars and took them from the past where they were destroyed into the future where they can now... These djinn are very much responsible for elementals. They're almost like the super consciousness of the elemental world. So that's why Mars couldn't, even though they've been trying to terraform it, they couldn't get it going.
Yeah, because there's no spirit there.
There's no spirit.
Yeah.
So now with that, with these new, and I wish I knew, I'll try to get their names, but just call them little brothers, little djinn. The little djinn in Mars are now able to essentially manifest the elementals, and they will be able to bring back all, because that was one of the things that we got into before we even tried it, was do they have the blueprints for the plants? Because they're very involved with the plant kingdom. So I think that, I know that in the new reality, Mars will just become a beautiful place again. Because they've got the little djinn back. Without it, it's like you got a problem with your heart, so you have it transplanted. If you didn't make an energetic change to the same area, you're going to have the same problem happen to the heart you just got. You know, you have to do it at the energetic level. And without the little djinn, there was no way that you could actually have a terraforming situation occur within Mars. Now you can. So we just mucked with time. We mucked with the past.
Did we?
Yeah, absolutely.
But was it messing with it, or was it just... setting it, it's like putting
we set it right,
putting it, rectifying it.
We rectified it,
yeah.
But within the linear concept of history, we made an alteration to the timeline. That's why I say I'm not even sure that by creating a new reality, we're changing timelines and histories. That the book said. Well, all the little djinn got killed because of the etheric explosion that was caused by these sorcerers that set this trap for the Pleiadians. I mean, it's a great story.
All right. So, hey, can we go back to the sorcerers and the Pleiadians and the relationship? Tell us more.
I don't know much about it because it's like when I got the image, it was like the left side of my brain, so to speak, was just taken over with this, all I knew, it sort of took the image of Merlin, the typical wizard. It was like a archetypical archetype of the wizard, the sorcerer. But this was like at the creator god level. I mean, somebody that was not, I mean, these people knew what the hell they were doing. They were mucking with an etheric, setting a trap, so that when the Pleiadians came in and put this 3D bomb in there, it ripped a hole in the etheric, and the etheric basically killed off all the little djinn, and probably a lot of other things. They just couldn't. It was like ripping the fabric of time and space apart. So
that's another familiar story. Go ahead.
Yes, yes, yes. And so then the Pleiadians only see what's happening at the 3D, because I don't believe that, at least at the point that happened, that they had a full understanding of the potential power of sorcerers. And, I mean, a sorcerer, what are they working with? They're just working with energy. It's nothing more than what we're working with, but they know how to use it, and we didn't. The Pleiadians, I don't think, really understood what was happening energetically to see it. But now, millions of years into the future, I could go back there and I could look for something like that. It wasn't like I went in there. I'm going like, I knew. I said, the Pleiadians just wouldn't have done this. This wouldn't have been, this is too weird energetically. Thought forms and controls over that sort of thing. And then when I looked at it, I saw a trap. I saw it at the etheric level, and I'm like, who did this? And then I see this, like this image, and I couldn't focus on it. It was like at the corner of my eye. I couldn't, maybe I didn't want to. Maybe I didn't want to look around and say, well, who are you, But it's, so Walt got really concerned when I was explaining what was happening, why all this happened, and he said, well, are they going to come back? Are they going to do the same thing? I mean, I said, no, actually, they don't know that we woke up. I said, I don't know where they are right now, but they're not paying much attention over here because they got this place pretty well screwed up. And that's, they're in control, they think. They don't realize that, you know, while they were out watching television, the kids were getting awake in the bedroom. You know, we're waking up and that we're starting to make changes. I said, sooner or later, we'll probably get their attention. I said, but I'm not really concerned about it because they bet every sorcerer who has used energy the way they've used energy has bet that there does not exist creator gods of the stature of Gaia and of Terra and of Saturn. I don't know her name. I know those three are absolutely creator gods. Probably all the planets. I don't know. I don't know the full extent of how far you go with creator gods, but I mean the sun, but not the moon. You know, no creator god on the moon except maybe Joe the mechanic
or Herman the Nazi. Anyway,
yeah, right.
And Brad the CIA agent, and Kirk, the naval SEAL, you know, etc. It's pretty crowded up there, really, to be honest.
Yeah, but they all made the same bet that there's no creator god, and yeah. I'm betting that they were wrong.
So this, so to me, what it sounds like that they probably use something like a red mercury. In the anywhere near that where a bomb would go off and there would be red mercury there, it would accelerate it 1,000-fold.
Yeah, all they would have to do is put up the etheric signature of the red mercury.
Even, yeah.
You know, because again, it goes back to the concept of the energy universe. Hmm. If you can create an etheric, everything comes, even our bodies. There was a guy, what was his name? It was an Oriental. And I don't know how he did this. It's in Vibrational Medicine by Dr. Gerber. And he took an embryo of a rabbit, and he somehow or another was able to put phosphorus so that they could read it on like radioactive phosphorus so they could see it. And it got uptaken into the acupuncture system, and the nadia was called the nadia system. The acupuncture system is... based on the bones and the structure and the muscles and that sort of thing, whereas the nadia is an energy signature that is like a web that's going out, but all of the nerves end up becoming the 3D manifestation of the nadia, and the nadia is all tied to the chakra systems. But they were able to take the phosphorus and uptake it into the acupuncture system and then into the nadia system. And what they saw was that there was a blueprint for all of the organs and all of the nerves, an energetic blueprint before that fetus began to actually create the different parts of itself. So what you got is it's always an energy signature. So from a sorcery standpoint, you don't have to have the red mercury sitting on the ground. You create an energetic blueprint of it, etherically, okay? And then it will become a 3D manifestation if a human being, I don't know who they are, but you have to have a thought witness to be able to lock it into the 3D. So maybe somebody like Bill Brockbrader was sitting on a mountain and said, yeah, I can see the red mercury there, we're good to go. And of course, he wouldn't have lived to see the next day because he would have been in the blast realm.
Foop. Yes. Well, red mercury, yeah. And you know, this is another thing that we've learned about this year, like the nature of red mercury, one story about where it came from, you know, the from Die Glocke, and like from Aldebaran and Werner Eckert and his crazy science Dr. Strangelove experiments. That's, you know, this whole idea of what it is, I mean, it's quite a material.
You know, there was a thing on Ancient Aliens about Van what's his name?
Von Neumann?
Van Braun?
Werner von Braun.
Yeah, and it was very detailed. It was very interesting. It wasn't ancient aliens. It was NASA secrets or something. But it was, they took it back all the way into talking about the ET connection and how much did he know. And then when he left the space agency, NASA itself, they talked about him actually working with corporations to create a breakaway civilization. It was a pretty awesome mainstream media presentation.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I saw it a couple days ago.
Oh.
Thought of you the whole time.
Time-traveling Nazi, isn't it? Anyway, as you can see, you know, they're coming out, but somehow they have to come out first. We have to recognize it. Ah, look, there's the Nazis. That's what you are. I knew there were. You've been calling yourselves other things. That confuses. But I see now. You're bloody Nazis. And hopefully it'll before too late. You know, before the gun is aimed at the forehead. You know.
Right, and it goes back to the concept that we wondered about. We talked about. I mean, everybody is sort of. I think that says, well, if they had all these weapons, why didn't they use them to win the war? Well, if you've suddenly expanded your entire reality to include space travel, the concept of controlling and manipulating and having a war and winning, that doesn't even apply anymore. You know, we don't have to have this war. We can create these corporations and we can control them with mind control and we can feed them fluoride and make them docile and we can put up electromagnetic cell phone. I mean, Tesla talks about the cell phone, you know, a good 100 years before it ever got out there. So when you look, not 100 years, actually, it was about 70 years. So, but when you got this situation where you are looking at a much grander playing field. It's like you were playing this board game and all of a sudden it turned into this 3D monstrosity. That little World War II thing was not important. You know, that
first you were playing in your garage and then you were playing at Wembley.
You know, but I think that that's why they didn't use them, that they didn't pursue the war. They knew by then that they could control without winning the war. And, you know, I mean, from the standpoint of those people that would have been in the know, the lesser beings of the Nazi Party, like von Braun, what you have is a situation you go, oh, let's let them go and kill themselves, and then we'll take over. It wouldn't have behooved the lesser ones to have Hitler and his crazy people running the world. That would be a harder nut to crack. So let them fail and then create, you know, an organization that works through corporations and Freemasonry, like we covered the other day, to be able to control it without worrying about the Hitler group.
Nancy, it just struck me that as you were talking about this, yes, obviously, there is an etheric reality behind the Fourth Reich. You know, the idea of the Fourth Reich.
Are you saying Fourth Reich or Third Reich? Are you saying the new one that they...
Yeah, the Nazi International that is apparent,
yes,
but
okay,
not named.
Are you you're calling it the Fourth Reich?
The Fourth Reich, yeah. Well, why not? That's what everybody else calls it. That's what Joe Farrell calls it, I'm sure.
Probably, yeah.
Or I think there's also the Nazi International. This is, I think, Martin Bormann's thing. And Nazi International is essentially, you know, what is going on in America? What is going on everywhere? The EU is basically the outline of Mein Kampf, so they say. It's like it already happened, nobody noticed, while we were having the 60s, 70s and 80s. In fact, you could have said that they might have kind of held it up as a bit of a barrier to hide behind.
Well, in my book, I came to the conclusion that Khrushchev and Pope John the 23rd and John Kennedy all recognized that the Nazis had not lost the war, that they were, in fact, the Nazi International, and that they were the ones that were working behind the scene, and they were about to take over everything. And I talk in extensively about how these three came together in many, many different ways, with the understanding from my standpoint that they were seeing, hey, I'm a lowly one person out here, and I can see the Nazi connection. Certainly with their powers and their intelligence capability, they would have seen the Nazi connection. So they came together and they were working to stop it. When they, I have to have admiration for what happened, because they said, okay, the Nazis, this is the Nazis. Okay, well, these three biggies in the world are now talking to one another about us, so we'd better do something about them. So what we'll do is we'll kill the Pope in June of 63, and we'll kill him with the fast-acting cancer that the United States government has so diligently produced that they were able to, you know, use it to kill the Pope, because the Pope, the month later, was supposed to have a meeting with John Kennedy. He had already been meeting with the stepson of Khrushchev. So they got rid of the Pope, and then in November they kill Kennedy, and then they make it look like it was a Russian hit so that David Rockefeller could go to Moscow and talk to the Politburo, which was the controlling government of the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union at the time, and tell the Politburo that if they did not get rid of Khrushchev right now, if you do not get rid of Khrushchev, we're going to blame the assassination on you, and then we're going to go to war. And so Khrushchev was then sent into exile by the Politburo, of which such a precedent could not even be conceived of by any of us that know this history. It was like, what? What could have happened that they would have done that? So that's what happened, is that we had a really golden chance of three people coming together and going after the Nazis again, but they were all taken away from us. And so now it was left to us to wake up to the fact that we still got this Nazi problem. And there's so many of us that are aware of it now that the fabric of their reality is disintegrating, because their reality is based on keeping the secrets. And hey, the secrets are being released week after week after week.
That's the ticket. Blow the covers off these underground bases. Shine the light down those holes.
Yep. Wake up, people.
Wake up. Look, they're underneath you.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's like a very difficult thing for people to realize that probably there's an underground world. Say you live in a small town, right? Let's just imagine, you live in a small town, perhaps 3 or 4 miles below the surface, there could be an entire city just underneath this tiny little town. You can imagine you could have an entire underground base that has just a shed at the top.
Well, yeah. you know about that thing just south of, south of the Giza Plateau, where they've discovered an enormous three layers of structures. And they found it because of this new satellite software program they've got that can take, I don't know the specifics of it. Couldn't find out where anybody was talking about the specifics. It might be still secret, but it's being used by archaeologists in Egypt. And this satellite sees down on the ground. If it's got ground penetrating capability, it only goes so deep. And as soon as it sees something, it bounces back. But this new software is able to tell it to look for gold, and it can actually look layer after layer after layer for gold. And at least three of these huge rooms that are like, blocks wide, big, are all gold. And there's enormous rooms, all sorts of hallways and connecting things, and it's three layers down there.
So there you go. So, they've been at it for thousands of years, the buggers.
But now they got it on satellite, and to take a look at they're going through trying to get the Egyptians to allow them to dig is amazing. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, they're not
now, out in the public. Let me say that they're already probably digging, you know, secretly. But
hey, Nancy, did you see my post this week?
On what?
The Sphinx.
No.
It's Robert Temple has come up with the idea several years ago, and you know, in conversation with Nikki, it kind of I know what the Sphinx is. It's Anubis. Look at the Sphinx, right?
Oh, yes, I did. Yes,
lions have very stubby paws. Big, stubby little forearms and big fat paws, right? The Pharaoh hound, right, looks exactly like... I took a photo and I put the Sphinx and then the Pharaoh hound, and I turned it around, so they're all facing the same way. You can see that that's exactly the same proportions, the same body shape, the same, the way that, you know, the back legs kind of curl around and a dog does, and all that stuff. And that the head that we have, which is, I've always had a bit like, that's a weird looking thing. Why is it so weird looking thing? Now it makes sense that the original head's been knocked off, but it's probably part of a temple somewhere. You know, it's probably like cut up into blocks and used somewhere. You could probably find it. And they carved it out of the remnant of the neck many, many thousands of years later.
In the image of a pharaoh.
In the image of some dude who got his nose shot off in the end. Anyway, that's the end of Level Beyond. That's been. Thank you very much, Nancy. It's been a very nice, break from today's weirdness. So I'm very happy to.
I'm hoping you're all grounded out now.
Yeah, I'm all grounded out. Yeah, I'm completely grounded, right underground. So,
thank you. Thank the audience.
Thank you
be
very
safe.
Much.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
Very much for coming. This thank has you. Been Level Beyond. We will be back in a smidgen of a moment's time with Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank Healing Group. Good night, and may your journeys take you beyond. Beyond.